Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We're here to help with the stone giant problem.
They're doing amazing things here.
She has like several pastries in her hand.
Wow, gothic.
Well, hello.
Deadstone Cleft is generally what brought us to the area.
Here be dragons.
We're happy to answer any questions.
Get the eyeball. Get the eyeball.
The giant-sized poles.
We cut this abalone.
I don't eat anything unless it's got seven layers of butter in it.
Well, let me tell you, sit down.
But they're pretty tart.
Brenda, let me talk to you for a second. Come over here to this dark alley.
Let's start here.
Mari and Jack are the kind of people who would go, well, how'd you get these fish and where'd they come from? Dorn and Reddit kind of people would go, fish.
Welcome back to Dice Shame. This is season 2, episode 40, Kettle of Fish.
MVP this week is AJG Wiz, who is chewing through the backlog and coming in hot on season 2. Thank you so much, AJ, and I hope you're excited to be up to date.
Beyond the Dark Productions features a variety of awesome audio fiction by Mark R. Healy. If you enjoy audio dramas, you might want to check out the OG Beyond the Dark, as well as The Strata, or the most recent Road of Shadows. Each of these shows has high-quality editing, acting, and writing, and are amongst some of the best productions out there right now. Give them a listen at theroadofshadows.com and don't miss your next great story. All right, should we play some D&D?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, we've seen on the internet that sort of gif or the scene, or maybe you've seen the movie of The Neverending Story, and you see that horse being eaten by the fucking mud swamp. And he's pulling it, and he's pulling it, and yeah.
I've never seen that movie.
It's always the like the thumbnail of, if you had childhood trauma, this is the scene that did it to you. And that's fair, and maybe true for many people. But I'm wondering, maybe apart from that, if you have seen it, what from your childhood scarred you? What stayed with you? What was something that maybe you shouldn't have seen? Maybe you snuck downstairs around Christmas time and you saw something on the TV that you shouldn't have seen, Harlan, and it stuck with you for a long, long time. Maybe you couldn't sleep. I don't know. But what stuck with you from your childhood that, yeah, obviously maybe doesn't bother you to this day, or maybe it does, but just kind of keeps coming back up?
I know yours, Harlan.
You know mine?
It's in The Lord of the Flies. I think Dad let us watch that. I was probably 12 and you would have been like 9. And, I don't know if you guys know the premise of the movie. It's like, you know, the society and everybody's read the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyways, in the movie, it was really well done. The movie in the 80s, not the black and white one, but the one that was done in the 80s, the 90s. They like drop that rock on Piggy's head and it just like crushes his skull. And it's very like visual. Oh. And he just, and Piggy dies, and I remember Harlan. He's like,
bawling. But
and
I remember
Piggy.
Dad stopped the movie,
yeah.
And I remember he put on like, it was like a dancer, like a flamenco dancer. Like
it was just on TV. You know,
that's what I mean. It was on TV. Yeah. Like he just turned it off, and it went to like PBS or TVO or something, and it was just like this flamenco dancer. And I remember being like, like that was the image that got scarred in my head. I don't even remember
that's
the movie.
Hilarious.
I remember that image. That's definitely one of them. Funnily enough, that wasn't the one I was thinking of. And Joe mentioned another one, which was Willow, which also scarred me when they turn into warthogs at the end. But that wasn't the one I was thinking of either. The one I was thinking of, which all of these are true, by the way, but the other one I was thinking of is I remember one time the Cabrels were over, our family friends. It was around Christmas time.
Calling
and
out.
I had snuck downstairs, and they were watching TV, and they were watching a spoof of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation one. Now, Mad TV did a spoof, and they kind of mocked the mafia, and it was like all shot up and stuff like that. And I've watched it, and I don't think that's it, but it's the only one that makes sense, because they wouldn't do two spoofs of this sort of high-quality claymation joke. But anyway, what it is that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer claymation thing, but it's like super gory and bloody. And I remember seeing it from the top of the stairs. And this was a video that I'd watched since I was like, you know, five. And I must have been like seven, like, or six, like really young. And I saw, you know, the elf and the reindeer getting their heads cut off and like killed.
No.
And the reason that came to mind is because, like, more so than Piggy from Lord of the Rings, which I like bawled in, this is one I was like wide eyed. Blood drained face, like, oh my god, and backed up, because like I don't think I had seen or realized that like horror or gore movies existed, because there's a point, right, when you just like, you know, and I guess for us it was, or for me it was a bit older, when it was just like, oh okay, so gore exists in the world. Like I hadn't read a book, I hadn't seen a TV show, it was just there, and it was my like childhood claymation Christmas memories being eviscerated. And it like totally stuck with me, and I was like, oh my god, and that totally scarred me. And I don't think I ever told anybody about that either, so
and now you love horror movies more than anything.
I really thought I had nothing for this, and then as you were talking, I came up with three different pieces of
you
media.
You know what's funny? Not to detour, but I didn't either, and then as I was explaining it, I was like, oh wait a minute, like, that's
I've never loved horror or jump scares or anything like that. It's just not my scene. And for whatever reason, like I remember at the Scholastic Book Fair, there was this like horror book that was a knockoff of Cujo. I just know there was an evil dog in it. I don't really know anything else about this book, but I know where I was. I know what van I was sitting in. I know where we were.
It was an Animorphs.
It wasn't an Animorph. No, those were,
he would never do that to me.
I'll listen to those weird alien shapeshifters fight fascist slugs any day, but no, there was this book. I don't have anything more than this impression of like being terrified of dogs for like a hot minute after reading this book about them, because we didn't have dogs growing up. It was just like this whole thing that was a moment. But then as I was thinking about that, there was another book that, I don't know, I'm going to say it scarred me, but left a huge impression when I read The Bridge to Terabithia for the first time. I fucking bawled my eyes out.
I was thinking about that book.
You know, I think it's the first book where I was like, oh, this connected to something in me, and I was not ready for something sensitive to be poked.
I remember watching My Girl too, and a similar vibe.
Yeah,
when Macaulay Culkin gets stung to death or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
same kind of thing where you get the wind knocked out of you. That was my Bridge to Terabithia, because I never read, because we didn't read in our house.
that was a very devastating book. Oof. I remember very specifically the description of the teacher, and very traumatic.
Yeah, something about going back there afterwards and everything. Just, I don't know. I was moved in a way I had never been before. It was the first time I was like, art can do this. Take this gut punch. And yeah, it was something.
I also have a book that I read when I was probably far too young. I'm going to say maybe fifth grade. I can't really remember the name of it or the author. I want to say it's like a Christopher Pike vibe.
Oh, yeah.
So it's young adult fiction that's horror and too adult for a 10-year-old. But I was a voracious reader, and I was really into Goosebumps. And
hell,
so I
yeah.
thought that was kind of like analogous. I remember reading this one scene, and I really hope that someone in the Discord will let me know what book I'm thinking of, where the protagonist is trying to escape a house fire, and so he or she ends up filling up a wetsuit with water, like hoses themselves down inside of a wetsuit to try to like move through the blaze. And they talk very descriptively about the flames burning the suit to their skin as they're like,
oh geez,
trying to battle their way through the burning house. It was terrible.
Christopher Pike's Chain Letter was another one. I don't know why I read that. Oh. Fucked me up forever.
I read a lot of Christopher Pike, so I feel you on that. Also, probably too young.
It's a rough choice for an elementary school library. I'm just going to say.
But they did it. There's a whole shelf of them.
So I'm going to just... I was in grade four, okay, and I remember there was this guy, and I'm not going to say his name because I still know him kind of, and he is throwing in messages at me in little balls of paper, and then I was writing them back, and I actually don't even remember writing them back, but the teacher found one, and it was like, fuck you, bitch, and like that was like the, you know, that was like the context of the conversation.
That's
between
so
us.
I remember this. I remember you getting in so much trouble.
And they suspended me. They suspended me from school for like 3 or 4 days or something like that. And then I was sent home and I was made to, my discipline was to stay in my room, even though it was beautiful. It was a summer break, or like coming up into the summer. I had to stay in my room and read. And I remember I read the children's version of Moby Dick, and there was a couple other children's novels of these. And it was speaking reading. But that's not the part that scarred me. It was the whole fact
books,
that
in the Guthrie household,
having to stay
off.
Inside on a beautiful day.
But when I came back to school, I had this sense, right? Like before I was suspended, I had the sense of what it meant to get in trouble. And then after I was suspended, I was like, well, now I've gotten in trouble and I see that it's really not so bad. So I in a way, it kind of pushed that envelope for me. And in a way, I'm kind of doing air quotes here, in a way, it kind of scarred me in the sense that it allowed me to continue to know, oh, I can push the envelope a little bit more. And what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, like, what, are they going to arrest me? No, they're not going to arrest me. I might get suspended from school and, I'm going to have to stay home and read.
That's
you know?
Really interesting, though. I like that a lot.
So it's a different angle of how to look at it.
The bad thing was more powerful than
well,
the bad
I remember
thing.
When Dad used to threaten to send us to military school. Mm. That scared the shit out of me. That scarred me. Yeah. I was talking to Joe the other day, actually. I was being like, because again, I had totally forgotten about that. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, Dad used to do that all the time. And it scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But he never actually sent us.
Yay!
It worked. Just a weirdly manipulative power move that parents can do to their kids, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't. Looking back now, it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
That's a thing that happened.
I have three things. One is when I was a kid, I used to go to a neighbor's place after school, and they had just show up, knock, knock, knock. Hi. No, I used to go there and hang out there. They had two daughters. One was about my age, and one was a little older. And I'd wait there until my mom got home. And the older daughter, one time, it was around Halloween, and she was watching the Tales from the Dark Side movie, which is an anthology series, which is like the framing of it is that there's like a witch and she has a little boy and she's going to eat him, like serve him for dinner. She's going to cook him. And he's telling her stories to get her to stall or whatever. And I was young. And at the time I was like really, really into like ancient Greece, ancient Rome, like ancient Egypt, like that kind of like history shit that like 8-year-olds get super into with like the horrible history books.
100%.
As long as you show me a bisected pyramid, I'm in.
Hell yes. And I loved ancient Egypt. And one of the stories was about a mummy coming to life and being sent on a revenge mission to kill all these people. And I'm like maybe 9 years old and I'm in their basement and this thing comes on. And I remember so clearly having this moment where I'm like so scared. And there's a part where like the mummy takes like a coat hook and it goes up to one of the people and like grabs them and it jams it up their nose and pulls their brain out in like a close up.
Yikes.
And it just scared the ever loving shit out of me as a kid.
I think Carlin just uncovered a memory.
I remember that.
I was also in that basement with Sophie.
We've known each other forever.
I remember I don't think I saw it, but I remember hearing about it. You literally did just unlock a memory.
Oh my God. That scared the hell out of me. The second one was I loved The Simpsons growing up, and I remember watching, I loved the Halloween specials, but I remember it was Halloween special. It was the fifth one. I would have been 7 or 8 years old, and I watched it, and it is the scene where Groundskeeper Willie burns. And when the skeleton showed up, for some reason, that triggered something in my brain. That scene where it cuts to the burned skeleton, and it's not scary, but 7-year-old me was it just scared the absolute bejesus out of me as well. And the last one is the on the topic of the books, which is when I read The Amber Spyglass for the first time.
Oh, fuck yeah.
When I got to the end of that, I must have been 12 when I read it, which is spoilers. The perfect time to read that book. I'm not going to say I won't spoil the ending of it in case somebody is going to get spoiled by this book that's 30 years old now or whatever. But I read the ending of that and I fucking cried so hard. That was the first time a book broke my heart. Joe, I was also a voracious reader. I read everything, and that was the first book that really got me.
All of this conversation unlocked another one for me. I gotta share it real quick, because this one actually has a weird, I tracked it down. So I read this book when I was a kid, big into the scary books, unlike Rob, and there was this book called, it was Bruce Colville's Book of Monsters, and there was a bunch of monster stories in it. It was a Scholastic one. Anyway, I read all of them, all the stories, and the last story in the book, in the first one, is called Timmer and the Furnace Troll.
Oh, shit.
And I remember it because I have it. It had a little opening that says, because he kind of comments on all the stories. They're all from different authors. And he's like, I have to tell you, this story is sick. I don't suppose it's going to stop you from reading it, but don't say I didn't warn you. And at the time, I was like, ha, 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 ha. And it tells the story of a little elf who, as part of his, school, it's Harry Potter type shit where he, has to, he's in this magic school for elves. And he has to be a part of the furnace trolls, rotation. He gets to sort of the end of the line. So the troll's the one who shovels the coal in the furnaces and all that kind of stuff. Everyone else gets better job placements. He kind of gets this one. And the troll takes him on this journey and shows him how cool it is to be a troll. And he reveals to him, he's like, well, you can be a troll too. And this elf is crying. Timmer's I don't fit in with my elves. Everyone bullies me. And he's like, well, you know how to do it, don't you? And the final scene of the book is Timmer and the furnace troll killing everyone in this class and eating them.
Whoa.
And literally, I remember I read this line over and over and over again because I didn't understand what I was reading. He wrote, then the furnace troll leapt forward and grabbed Mrs. Docent, which is the teacher, by her wrists and ankles, stretching her out like an accordion until you could hear all the bones in her spine pop, and bit the middle right out of her, gobbling down the pieces that remained in each hand as he moved towards the exit. Then the girl he likes, who's at the beginning of the story, his crush, she's please don't kill me. And with a pitchfork, he rams it through her.
I feel like I've read this.
It's so fucked up. And it absolutely scarred me to the point that maybe about 10 years ago, this started cycling around my brain. And I was like, oh my God, I've heard this. I was like, what is this? Where is this? What book was this? And I found the PDF. And I have it.
I've definitely read that.
It's so fucked up.
Looking at the.
But anyway, that's Killing Trolls, which is a pretty nice segue straight into.
They're a type of giant.
Actually, Killing Elves, I should say. It's Killing Elves, which is even better because we're going to die this episode.
Oh, God.
Shall we? Play some
DLC. Alrighty, let's do this.
Alright, let's do it.
Red, Doran, the two of you leave the barracks, followed by Veranda and Flycatcher, and you move through the town. You notice that a surprisingly high percentage of villagers are clothed in the now familiar uniform of the town guard. Looks like a lot of people are employed in the protection of this town. You move past a block of residential buildings, and your eyes catch on a battery of coops with poultry nesting. Looks like probably the people who live here also cultivate their food right here in the town.
Hey, that makes sense. Look, they get their own eggs and meat and everything. Obviously, if they're secluded from the outside world, I guess they're going to have to make that stuff.
Doran, you notice that this town is using similar materials to what you saw in Zosenbafel. The doorknobs, the paving stones, everything looks kind of similar to the gnomish city, but made in a size to fit the humans that live here. So you're noticing those kinds of details.
Yeah, and as I look around, you know, hey, Red, I don't know if you noticed, but take a look at all the little details of the stonework, the metal trinkets and ornaments on the handles and the doors.
Wow, Gothic.
No.
What?
Gnomish.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah, gnomish. So, I mean, it would make sense if they had this symbiotic relationship with the gnomes. I'm sure the gnomes probably helped build this place. I mean, but look at the artistry. I mean,
it's odd that they didn't realize the gnomes had died out, eh? You'd think they would have at least had some sort of knowledge that these supplies one day just sort of stopped.
I wouldn't be surprised if both of these civilizations died out, and then maybe people came back to this one because they just saw it. The gnomish civilization's hidden, you know?
Mm.
Maybe it's not the same ancestral bloodline that's been living here the whole time.
Maybe not. Anyway, let's head to the bar so we can see if we can talk to some people about the gossip in town. Figure out what they're doing. It looks like everyone's ready for war. Look, everyone's garbed out in the guards outfit.
Yeah, well, even before we get to the pub, I mean, I feel like maybe there's like eyes on us.
Of course. Yeah, you guys are attracting a ton of attention. There are no dwarves in town. There are no tabaxis.
Hi.
I picture that all of a sudden we stop and all eyes are on us and everybody's listening to our conversation.
Yeah, like at the end of that conversation. Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that...
Hey, hello, we're visitors, and Bebe said to make ourselves welcome, and...
Yeah, but we're just trying to move... I mean, you know, we're happy to answer any questions. We're normally called the Nightstone...
We're here to help with the Stone Giant problem, that's why.
Yeah, we're here to help with the Stone Giant problem, and boy, do you have a big problem.
A couple of laughs from the... group of
hey,
people.
They like the song and dance, Doran.
Now we're doing stand-up.
Let's put on the old skit.
So we came from Grunhug.
Dwarves walk like this, and tabaxi, we walk like...
Find a soapbox immediately. I don't know where it comes from. But...
We're just going to go to the pub now. And Red, like, grabs Doran's hand and, like, pushes through the crowd. And then when he's out of earshot, he says, "Look, I want to talk to you about Veranda. She's acting weird. Yeah. I think we should confront her about it."
I don't think she got any sleep last night. Did you look at her? God.
No. Mari and I were talking to her, and she's been... Well, we were talking to Flycatcher, really, and said that she has bad dreams. But I also get a weird vibe from that cat. I kind of want to... I don't know.
Don't tell me you want to eat it.
Talk to... No, I don't want to eat the cat. Why would I want to eat the cat? Have you ever seen me eat a cat?
I don't know. Well, you said I kind of want to, and then you stopped your sentence, so I...
Because I was...
Red, I mean, come on. You said some pretty outlandish things before.
All right, a little part of me wants to eat the cat. Okay, fine, are you happy?
A tiny part of me,
but not enough to articulate it.
You can't eat the cat, okay?
Red elf-handed Robin.
Look, a part of me wants to speak to Veranda away from the cat. Yeah. We spoke to the cat away from Veranda. I'm curious. I don't know, I feel like she's looking over her shoulder.
Yeah.
But there's no one around here. She doesn't know anybody here.
I'll distract the cat. You go and talk to Veranda.
Okay, cool. Hey, there's a fishmonger over there. Go grab some
fish. I saw it right out of the corner of my eye. Say, I'll meet you over there just as soon as you're done talking. Make it quick. You know these flying cats. They never want to stay still.
Yeah. Red licks his lips.
Meanwhile, Mari and Jack, where do you make your way?
I like to imagine we're just leaving the bakery. Because we've been to a bakery and Mari is excitedly explaining some baked goods to Jack.
Yeah.
This is bread.
Well, she has like several pastries in her hand and she's like, What did you think of the golden berry crumpet? I mean, I don't see golden berries very often, but they're only grown in moonlight, so it kind of makes sense that you could grow them here.
You know,
but they're pretty tart.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. My mind was really trying to crunch the math on where they put all the fields that they're defending to get the grains to grow them, but they're doing amazing things here. And I like, if they've got all the stuff like Zosenbafel had, do they have underground places where they grow food? Like, it's not crazy to think that. We just saw that yesterday.
I mean, they might, but there's also a lot of things with custard. So, and she has this thing called a custard bloom, which, like, when you press on it, like, custard comes out of it, like, it blooms out of it.
Oh.
But it's very tasty.
I should have got one of those.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I highly recommend it if we get the chance, but...
Yeah. Torin would love that one.
But,
We should probably find someone in town to talk to, though.
Yeah, no. I just... I was just excited to see some good food.
Listen, it's so easy to get excited about pastry. Let me tell you.
Hey, did you notice that Doran seemed a little off last night as well?
Yeah, I'm sure felt like he and Red were having some kind of conversation.
Feels like a night for it.
Yeah. Just kind of waiting around to see who else is stopping by the bakery to get their treats heading on to shift or something.
Yeah, of course. You guys are like standing around outside.
Well, yeah.
Eating your pastry.
I know I just had oatmeal, but I can't say no to this.
Getting all again crumbly and covered in powdered
the
sugar.
The local pastry, you're absolutely going to.
Yeah.
I love this fucking like military town and some asshole in the morning's like, fresh galettes and rolled pastries. It's like.
Hey, you find your joy wherever you can.
There's a regional galette. I have to
Every
try it.
Every morning I go to my post. I don't eat anything unless it's got 7 layers of butter in it.
That's the only thing that fuels these fucking soldiers is like fine pastry.
You yeah. gotta find joy somewhere.
There's a musical being filmed.
I mean, that's why I figured there was gonna be a pub. Yeah,
these are pretty good, eh?
For sure. So Jack, as you and Mari are talking, a couple of soldiers do enter this pastry shop, this bakery, and load up just fucking arms full of danishes.
makes the morning worth getting up for, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, certainly does. You're new in town.
I might die today.
Yeah, we were sort of heading to Deadstone Cleft is generally what brought us to the area, and then happened upon this well-fortified place. And listen, anywhere with a roof like that over your head, well, you know, means you're not worrying about boulders falling on it, so.
Yeah, it's served us well, although some of the roofs really do need a good repair since the last fight. Listen, Captain Bebe gave us a briefing this morning about what you guys are planning to do for us, and I think I can speak for everyone here to say we really respect your sacrifice.
I mean, it's pure serendipity, honestly. It's if we can help you, we're glad to do it on the way.
Not liking that word sacrifice.
Have you guys ever had scouts out that way?
Someone who looks impossibly skinny considering the number of muffins they have, they're just cramming into a bag. He's like, yeah, I've actually been there a couple of times, Deadstone Cleft.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a scout for Captain Baby, yeah.
Oh, amazing. You don't think you could sort of show us the path on a map, do you?
I mean, I could tell you about it.
Yeah. Okay, let's start here. And Jack takes two steps outside the shop before he conjures up an illusory map of sort of the area as he's understood it so far.
Definitely. So you know this valley.
Yeah.
Basically where you exited Slatefell.
Yeah.
And that you headed east in this pine forested valley to make your way towards Slatefell.
Not a lot of details outside of that.
I'm imagining it's like as it builds out, there's like a sketchy sound as it's like, is it like the magic isn't as strong and it's just like doodled.
Yes.
It's like doodled in and it's like here be dragons.
Well, there's
definitely. Yeah, well, if this is cool. Slatefell, then there's a dead ended canyon not too far from here, maybe 2 hours hike to the east. Until you get to the river, and then you follow that upstream a ways, and as he's describing, he's sort of like gesturing to your illusory map, like a squiggly river, sort of an approximation of where that might go.
Yeah, and as he's talking, I'm trying to keep adding more details as they become apparent. Does that look right? Does that feel?
Yeah, it looks pretty good. Like a dusting of crumbs from the muffin he's eating sort of fall through the illusion as he's gesturing to the map. The canyon walls, I think when you get to about here, there are these holes and doorways. They're like openings of some kind, and you'll see stone bridges that just span the canyon, and that's where the giants come and go from. So
they're giant-sized holes.
I didn't get close enough to really get a feel for it, but I think so.
Okay.
Listen, if you go out there, you're going to want to keep an eye on the sky, okay?
Why is that?
I don't know if you... I mean, you're not familiar with this area, but there are these huge birds in the land that we call rocs that will pick you up and eat you while they're flying.
Yikes.
And slate folk know to take cover when you see a shadow pass over, so just take my advice. And this time of year especially, they're ravenous. From the winter time, they'll peck anything that moves.
I've had enough scary encounters with regular sized griffins or a legendary sized Parryton once. I'm done with dangers in the sky, let me tell you.
Have you ever seen one?
Yeah, a few times. You just gotta get close to the ground under a tree and stay still.
All right. That sounds threatening.
And then the guy with the Danishes is like, there's barbarians on the mountain, too. So,
of course there are.
Be careful. They are not friendly to slate folk, so best keep out of their way.
Uthgard?
I don't know what that word means.
Let me tell you. Sit down, and I'll start my class.
Oh, here we go.
God, pan away. Please, God.
Yeah, so you've gained some map, some recon.
Mm-hmm.
Doran, Red, you're at a fishmonger?
Well,
where are the fish coming from?
I guess there's a river.
Oh, yeah.
The fish are coming from a well deep within the ground.
Oh, they're wellfish. I love that. I mean, there are subterranean lakes full of like white eyeless fish.
I mean, are
fish.
There no? I mean, in the Underdark, there are. Well, I don't know where the. I don't know how the fish got there. Maybe there's a traveler.
Got this abalone.
It's like it's a combination of really,
See,
really.
Listen, Mari and Jack are the kind of people who would go, "Well, how'd you get these fish? And where'd they come from?" Dorn and Red are the kind of people who would go, "Fish."
Hey, here.
And Doran reaches in and grabs a copper shilling. I'm sure he has something, and he gives it to the fishmonger, and he takes a fish head, not even like a worthy piece of fish. And he's like,
"Sure." And the fishmonger's like, "Thank you."
He leans down and he kind of pushes the eyeball and makes it kind of, you know, look at the cat. And he's playing around with it, and he tries to get the cat to come to him.
Cats love it when you mess with fish eyeballs.
Yeah,
this
they
one does.
They love this one trick.
Does he?
Yeah, great. Flycatcher is into it. Flycatcher loves a fish head.
Yeah. Like, the eyeball pops out, and all of a sudden it's an eyeball and a long, stringy optical cord.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Get more descriptive, Alex.
Uh-huh. Come here. Yeah. Get the eyeball. Oh, you can't get it, can you? Oh, come up here.
Good.
Oh, you can fly. I forgot you could fly.
Veranda, let me talk to you for a second. Come over here to this dark alley.
She follows you.
What's going on with you? You're all tired. Looks like you didn't sleep last night. Having bad dreams?
Something like that.
Look, cut the bullshit. I know what you are. He continued to bluff.
Bluffingly. Why don't you go ahead and roll a deception for me?
Oh, okay. Dice in my DNA.
I know who you are and what scares you. Where are the drugs heading?
That is 11.
Misery!
Deception?
Oh, not great. 14.
Okay. I know I said I was going to leave last night, but I wasn't expecting that we would find a town here. I told you that I was well-traveled, right? That I knew every innkeeper from here to Belyard, but I've never seen this place before.
Right. Well, that's fine. None of us have. But why is that such a problem? What's going on? And is it to do with that damn cat? Red says and points to Doran, distracting it.
And in the background, this cat's like flying around chasing an eyeball.
She nods.
Is that why you don't want to talk?
She nods again.
All right, look. There are many ways that we can communicate that don't require it being in person. Look, tell me what I need to know as quickly as possible.
She looks around, and then she pulls out your bag of holding.
Sure.
And
steals it.
She takes it,
long
and she
con,
fucking
baby.
Runs. No, she like rifles through until she finds a piece of parchment and a quill, and she starts scratching down some words for you.
Yes, and I can even speak Draconic, or
speak all these things, but I can't read. Damn it.
I can speak Elvish, Draconic, or Giant, if that helps.
She shakes her head, and she writes down, "Trouble is coming."
And he folds it up and puts it in his pocket. Well, of course trouble's coming. The giants are meant to attack any day, and then we need to head to Denstone Cleft. I don't know if you're coming with us or what.
No,
but I need
no.
to be- What?
No, you don't understand. This is why I can't talk to you.
I'm trying to understand. Look, fine. Trouble is coming, and it's not the giants. Is there anything I can do? Is there anything we can do to prepare? I'm here. I'm happy to help you, Veranda. Look, I know what you are. Fine if you don't want to leave, but...
You hear the sound that you heard yesterday. The gates to the city are opening. Jack and Mari, you're closer to the center of town, and you watch as three covered wagons pulled by horses creak into the town square. The sides of the wagons painted with bright colors and the words, Midnight Carnival.
Thank you once again to our wonderful Patreon supporters, Adam Fry, Amanda Kitchener, Amy Garza, Anne, Cecil Lee Wilson, Jerry Rose Anderson, Christopher, Colin Burkhart, Crow, Cypress Key, Cytosine, DS, Danny, Default Trauma, Dippity, Elizabeth H, Emma, Ghost, Haley, Harper the Marks, Heather Nichols, JD, Joy Robinson, KR, KM, Cade, Kirsten Wolf, Lasagna, Last Ruth on the Left, Leader J, Lizzie Demon, Lorelei Feldman, Matilda Rushing, Marie, Melinda Curley, Mills, Melissa, Merlin, Nimble Dingo, Regan, Wren, Ruth Ann Reed, Scotty, Sky, S-Ray 96, Terabyte, Tony Pepperoni, Xander Morning Dove, and Zach House. Woo!
Cool. Ooh. I am Stromboli!
Yes. Hey,
that's right.
Come and see my dancing puppet.
Zulkin, you bastard.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.